gains or advantages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, some are going to find this latest development absolutely hilarious. I think when push comes to shove, when they're facing a winter of freezing without Russian gas, that the EU has had to make some serious decisions. Get this. EU Parliament declares fossil fuel to be green energy as climate change narrative self-destructs. This may be the most welcome news of the year already. The EU Parliament just announced a decision that's causing the fraudulent climate change narrative to self-destruct. EU Parliament backs labeling gas and nuclear investments as green, reads the Reuters headline. The European Parliament on Wednesday backed EU rules labeling investments in gas and nuclear power plants as climate-friendly. Reuters continues, explaining the EU has been plunged into an energy crisis at dividing which energy sources are deemed to be renewable. When this rule is fully adopted, it means Russia's Putin will become one of the world's largest exporters of green energy. It also means NATO and Ukraine are engaged in a war against a green energy leader, while Western sanctions have blocked Russia's exports of green energy. EU Parliament backs green label for nuclear and natural gas, defined climate left, reports the Washington Examiner. The decision will ease construction of infrastructure for those power sources over the objections of some environmentalists and members of the bloc. Western Europe is collapsing under the lunacy of globalist green energy policies. And by the way, this is one of Mike Adams' best reports ever, in my judgment. This is from Natural News. This decision is the first sign European leaders may be pulling back from the green energy suicide cult that now typifies socialist, progressive, libtard governments that are more interested in virtue signaling than allowing their own domestic economies to function. A fraudulent junk science narrative of climate change has caused Western nations, including the U.S., to dismantle much of their fossil fuel infrastructure over the past 20 years. With Russia's energy exports suddenly cut off due to economic sanctions, Western Europe is finding itself mired in an unprecedented crisis with potentially catastrophic consequences. Suddenly, European nations are panicked to try to rebuild their energy infrastructure. But since they've officially blocked most funding for non-green energy projects, the only way to get funds to rebuild fossil fuel infrastructure is to declare fossil fuels be green. And that's exactly what the EU Parliament has just done with natural gas, delivering a devastating blow to the climate change narrative, which was always based so much on quackery and bunk that I've called it the atmospheric transgenderism. If men can get pregnant, then CO2 is a pollutant, you see. If you're fabricating reality, then anything goes. I think that's absolutely brilliant. Joe Olson and I have done a series on climate change. It has 9 installments. You can find it on my blog at jamesfetzer, at BitChute channel Jim Fetzer. It's a video series where we have nine different installments, beginning with the fact that there's no correlation between the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and the temperature of Earth. If there's no correlation, there can be no causation. Even when there is correlation, as in the case of tobacco and health and vaccines and autism, a big pharma and big tobacco put up a monstrous argument that the correlation was specious, meaning it did not reflect a causal relation. And there can be odd cases where that is so. For example, if it turned out the women who went into premature labor had first names that began with vowels more often than those that did not, then you could have a correlation between those factors, and yet there's no reason whatsoever to think there's any causal connection. In the case of cancer and smoking, however, unlike the vowels with which your name begins in premature labor, there are obvious reasons to believe there's a causal connection, just as in the case of autism and vaccines. The industry wants to deny it, but the autism and vaccines, it's a perfect correlation. The more the vaccine, the more the autism, the less the vaccine, the less the autism. Because of the proliferation of vaccines, which make the pharmaceutical companies fantastic amounts of money because they're cheap to produce and have a huge profit margin. This is like soft drinks, Coke and Pepsi and the like. The reason they do so much advertising is their product is so cheap to produce and brings in such a wide profit margin. They have all kinds of money available for advertising. That's true of big pharma as well. Well, this is absolutely fascinating in Europe. I mean, a modicum of sanity. It turns out that even progressive national leaders of European nations are being dragged back to reality, kicking and screaming, reluctantly admitting that fossil energy is the only thing that can power modern economies, at least until hot fusion or cold fusion are commercialized. Meanwhile, one of the countries that has suffered most massively and is now in a state of advanced decay and chaos as it collapsed, Sri Lanka, occurring after green policy banned synthetic fertilizer. Anytime the greenies get put in charge, they destroy everything in sight, economies, industries, and entire nations. The most obvious recent example is Sri Lanka, where the green movement pushed government leaders there to outright ban all synthetic fertilizers, nitrogen-based, made from natural gas, for example, in a move to go organic. This makes no sense, by the way, since organic agriculture should focus on avoiding GMOs and pesticides, not banning nitrogen fertilizer. There's nothing wrong with using nitrogen-based fertilizer to grow organic food. In fact, organic crops absolutely need nitrogen fertilizer, even in the USA. The USDA organic program does not prohibit the use of synthetic nitrogen fertilizers on organic crops. If they did, the organic food industry would not exist. But the greedy globalists pushed the issue and Sri Lanka banned the fertilizer. This led to a catastrophic collapse in food production, which has now led to the total collapse of Sri Lanka's economy and government. The country is now in a state of lawless chaos, headed into absolute ruin, as Daily Caller explains. Environment Minister Mahinda Amawara declared a government initiative to save the Earth from our own geoengineering misuse, greed, and selfishness in 2020 ahead of a forum on halving nitrogen waste. The move was part of Sri Lanka's effort to pursue environmental, social, and governance goals. The country signed on to a green finance taxonomy with the International Finance Corporation in May that included a commitment to organic fertilizer. The result was catastrophic. War from Daily Caller. Sri Lanka is in a last-ditch effort to stave off economic collapse after an allegedly climate-friendly ban on artificial fertilizer devastated one of the country's largest industries, according to experts. Sri Lanka has been racked with poverty, inflation, and fuel shortages on a massive scale, with the prime minister declaring Tuesday that the country has gone bankrupt, according to Business Insider. A ban on chemical fertilizers implemented in April of 2021 in an effort to promote organic farming proved to be the final straw after a string of missteps decimating Sri Lanka's primary source of income and forcing it into bankruptcy. Our economy has faced a complete collapse, Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe said on June 23rd. The government lifted the fertilizer ban in November of 2021, but the damage had already been done. Peter Earle, a former finance market trader and economist at the American Economic Institute for Economic Research, reported, "The decision to overnight shift away from synthetic fertilizers was an absolute disaster. Never forget that the green movement is part of the globalist depopulation agenda to starve billions of human beings to death while collapsing economies around the world. Food scarcity is being engineered on a global scale by outlawing ranch animals in the Netherlands, burning down food production facilities in the United States, halting oil exploration, and regulating fuel refineries out of existence. It's all being done under the label of green, but what it really accomplishes is a total collapse of modern human civilization. Sri Lanka is the canary in the coal mine of what's coming for the world. What's happening in Sri Lanka right now will be happening in many areas across Western Europe and the U.S. by early 2023 if we don't urgently alter our course and restore the flow of food and energy. That would require removing the criminal Biden regime from power and restoring the rightful winner of the 2020 election, Donald J. Trump. By reversing the deliberately destructive policies of the criminal Biden regime, America could get back on its feet and avoid the Sri Lanka collapse scenario. But if we stay under the thumb of the Biden regime's homosexual, pervert authoritarians who despise freedom, farming, and energy, America will go down the path of Sri Lanka and end in ruin. Remember, under the Biden regime, they think it's far more important to have pervert child grooming pedophiles in charge of government offices than to find someone who's competent and know what they're doing. Essentially, America is now being ruled by incompetent, economically illiterate, demon-infested women with penises. And the results are already catastrophic. I think he's got it exactly right, exactly right. And the evidence is super abundant and compelling. And I've been reporting it again and again and again. Just go back and take a look at the Need to Know shows I'm doing every day of the week, 5 days a week, Need to Know, typically with two commentators on each story. We've been covering all these developments. They're incredible and they're devastating. And this may be one of the best ever reports from Mike Adams. I applaud him. Meanwhile, surprise, surprise, internal memo reveals Capitol Police were warned BLM from Baltimore was busing in rioters disguised as Trump supporters on January 6th. It was all a setup. Trump supporters were framed by FBI and government operatives and BLM and Antifa terrorists. A leaked internal memo revealed that the U.S. Capitol Police Intel Unit warned that BLM from Baltimore were busing in rioters for January 6th protest. According to the memo, the rioters were going to blend in. Via investigative reporter Paul Sperry. BLM Antifa will wear MAGA hats, wear camo, and attempt to blend in with MAGA crowd. So violence blamed on Trump supporters attending Trump rally. Breaking. Internal email reveals day before January 6th riot. U.S. Capitol Police Intel Unit warned. BLM from Baltimore was busing in rioters. BLM Antifa will wear MAGA hats, wear camo, and attempt to blend in with MAGA crowd, so the violence will be blamed on Trump supporters attending the Trump rally. Now, that was the day before the January 6th, which would be January 5th. And as I've reported before, on the day before that, January 4th, Trump authorized 20,000 National Guard be assigned to protect the Capitol, which was refused, declined by Nancy Pelosi, who is Speaker of the House, is in charge of the Capitol Police, by Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the Senate, and by Mayor Bowser of Washington, D.C. Why would they do that? Well, because they had other plans. They knew what they had in mind. This was all by design. They were in collusion with Antifa, BLM, the Capitol Police, the FBI. This is all a very elaborate scam to trash Trump and Trump supporters, claim he was instigating an insurrection so under the obscure provision of the 14th Amendment, he could be precluded from running from office again because the Democrats were terrified he would clean their clock. He was in the process of wiping them out in the November election, the 2020 election, when they had to stop the vote, recalibrate, reset, give Biden massive boosts in key states, hundreds of thousands of votes, and fix the algorithms to guarantee that thereafter that Biden would remain in the lead, which, of course, was all being supplemented by the 2,000, maybe 54,000, as many as 54,000 mules that were stuffing the drop boxes that the Democrats had arranged to be set out, where even security cameras captured it and they took selfies of themselves. They were being paid $10 for each fake ballot, and they made a lot of money. Those Zuckerberg funds, Zuckbox, were being used, I have no doubt, to pay these people to stuff those drop boxes with phony ballots, and it was up to $400 million, as much as $400 million. Divide by 10, you begin to get the idea, $10 per 400 mil. You begin to get the idea how many ballots were being stopped. That's on the order of 40 million fake ballots. Antifa was actively involved in the January 6th protests and riots. This has been widely discussed by officials and in reports on this website, that's the Daily Caller. Katrina Lala wrote this back in Feb 2021. Ex-Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund dropped a bombshell in February 2021 during a hearing before the Senate Rules and Homeland Security Committees. Sund testified that according to intel gathered by law enforcement groups, members of the Proud Boys, white supremacist groups, Antifa, and other extremist groups were expected to participate in January 6th, and they might be inclined to become violent. The Democrat media complex has totally ignored eyewitness accounts detailing how black bloc Antifa terrorists infiltrated the peaceful MAGA demonstrations. According to a former FBI agent on the ground at the Capitol, at least one busload of Antifa goons infiltrated the Trump rally as part of a false flag operation. Senator Ron Johnson, whom I'm proud to say is my senator from Wisconsin and a good guy among the very few in Congress who are actually doing the job he was elected to do, on Tuesday entered into the record explosive testimony of eyewitness accounts from Michael Waller detailing how he saw agents provocateurs at the Capitol. An eyewitness account that I read experts from in today's hearing provides a different perspective on what, why, and how things got out of control at the Capitol on January 6th. Senator Ron Johnson at San Ron Johnson, February 23, 2021. Michael Waller, a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy, specializing in propaganda, political warfare, psychological warfare, and subversion, said he was at the Capitol on January 6th and witnessed plainclothes militants, militant aggressive men in Donald Trump and MAGA gear at a front police line at the base of the temporary presidential inaugural platform. Agents provocateur, scattered groups of men exhorting the marchers to gather closely and tightly toward the center of the outside of the Capitol building and prevent them from leaving. Fake Trump protesters, a few young men wearing Trump or MAGA hats backwards and who did not fit in with the rest of the crowd in terms of their actions and demeanor, whom I presume to be Antifa or other leftist agitators, and disciplined uniform column of attackers, a column of organized disciplined men wearing similar but not identical camouflage uniforms and black gear, some with helmets and GoPro cameras or wearing subdued Punisher skull patches. Well-known Antifa insurgents leader John Sullivan was arrested in Utah after the U.S. Capitol riots. Antifa protester John Sullivan was caught on video posing as a Trump supporter during the rioting at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Let me add, Millie Weaver was right on top of this. She interviewed Sullivan right after the riots and was nailing him on it. He was evasive. Millie has just done brilliant work on this. Sullivan also organized an Antifa rally on January 6th during the U.S. Capitol, which has been ignored by the media. Surprise, surprise. Here's from his Twitter page. Kick these fascists out of D.C. January 6, 2021. Dump Trump for good. Location? Washington Monument, 11 a.m. Despite all the reports indicating that Antifa played a role in the January 6 riot, the media continues to blame President Trump and his supporters. Here's an early report. This is already January 15th, 2021. January 15th. This is just 9 days later. James, brother of accused leftist provocateur John Sullivan, claims 226 Antifa members started the Capitol riots, and they were wearing their MAGA hats backward to identify. Breaking. More recent, January 3rd, 2022. Feds finally admit to running secretive DOJ commandos at January 6th Trump protests. And, of course, there's much, much more that goes along with it. I mean, this is simply stunning. The January 6th committee is a complete and total fraud, a complete and total sham, as dishonest as the day is long. Significantly, no one seems to care. Monmouth poll compiles top 22 priorities of American people. Ukraine versus Russia and J6 committee outcome does not even appear on their list. Does not even appear on the list of the 22 top priorities of the American people. Monmouth University, and this was July 5th, conducted another political poll of U.S. respondents in addition to the plummeting approval of Joe Biden. The worst yet, at 36% according to the survey, respondents were asked to list their top concerns. The responses were recorded but did not come from a list presented by Monmouth. They just compiled the results. As asked, what is the biggest concern facing your family right now? The results show the top priorities of Americans and the disconnect between the priorities of Congress, really the Democratic Party, and the American people are stark. Turning to issues close to home, ask her question 7. What is the biggest concern facing your family right now? They had to write in their own answer. inflation, 33%, gas prices, 15%, the economy, 9%, everyday bills, groceries, et cetera, 6%. Nothing else was higher than 5%. Abortion, reproductive rights, 5%. Guns, gun ownership, 3%. Healthcare costs, 3%. Job security, unemployment, 3%. College tuition, school costs, 2%. Housing, mortgage, 2%. Safety, crime, 2%. Civil rights, 1%. Climate change, 1%. Coronavirus, 1%. Education, 1%. Family illness, 1%. Quality of government, 1%. Social security, seniors, 1%. Taxes, 1%. Immigration, 0%. Retirement savings, 0%. Terrorism, national security, 0%. Other 5% don't know. No answer, 6%. Nowhere did anyone identify supporting Ukraine or the Russia-Ukraine conflict as a priority. And yet Ukraine has taken up almost all the legislative effort from Congress. The total taxpayer-funded congressional spending is nearly $600 billion. Also absent from concerns of the American people is any mention of the January 6th committee again. Another time-wasting political exercise by Congress detached from the priorities of the electorate. The top priorities are what we would expect to see: economic issues, inflation, gas prices, the economy, the ability to pay everyday bills like groceries are the priorities of the American people. All of these problems were directly caused by Joe Biden and the policies of his administration. Climate change, the number one focus of the administration, is not even in the top 10. We are in an abusive relationship with our own government. They got it right.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, if the green energy story is a fraud, if January 6th is a fraud, if the American people are preoccupied with issues that are going to be devastating during the November midterms, if we're allowed to have them, and I believe the Democrats have a plan to preclude that, how about the COVID pandemic and the vax? Get this. Pfizer asked court to dismiss whistleblower lawsuit because the government was aware of the fraud being perpetrated by Pfizer. The lawyer representing whistleblower Brooke Jackson said, Pfizer is arguing the court should dismiss Jackson's lawsuit alleging fraud in Pfizer's COVID-19 clinical trials because the U.S. government knew about the wrongdoing, knew about the fraud, but continue to do business with a vaccine maker. And you can count Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci as having been a principal here, I have no doubt. A lawsuit filed by whistleblower Brooke Jackson alleging Pfizer and two of its contractors manipulated data and committed other acts of fraud during Pfizer's COVID clinical trials is paused, following a motion by the defendants to dismiss the case. In an interview with The Defender, which is Bobby Kennedy's website, Jackson's lawyer said Pfizer argued the lawsuit, which was filed under the False Claims Act, should be dismissed because the U.S. government knew of the wrongdoings in the clinical trials but continued to do business with a vaccine maker anyway. Under the False Claims Act, whistleblowers can be rewarded for confidentially disclosing fraud that results in a financial loss to the federal government. However, a 2016 Supreme Court decision that expanded the scope of a legal principle known as materiality, resulted in a series of federal court decisions to which fraud cases brought under the False Claims Act were dismissed. As interpreted by the Supreme Court, if the government continued paying a contractor despite the contractor's fraudulent activity, meaning despite the contractor's fraudulent activity being already known to the government, the fraud was not considered material to the contract. Pfizer is a federal contractor because it signed multiple contracts with the U.S. government to provide COVID vaccines and Paxlovid, a pill used to treat the virus. Pfizer claims they can get away with fraud as long as the government would write them a check, despite knowing about the fraud, attorney Robert Barnes has said, where Barnes has been widely admired as an attorney with integrity who is powerful and has the balls to take on the government. The other two defendants in the case, Venta Via Research Group, which conducted trials on behalf of Pfizer and Nikon PLC, also a Pfizer contractor, are involved with them as plaintiffs, as defendants. In an attempt to strengthen the False Claim Act's anti-retaliation provisions and install new safeguards against industry-level blacklisting of whistleblowers seeking employment, Congress, in July of 2021, introduced the False Claims Amendments Act of 2021. In December of 2021, Pfizer hired a well-connected lobbyist, Hazen Marshall, and the law firm Williams & Jensen to lobby against the bill. Pfizer has previously been heavily fined in connection with the False Claims Act. As part of a 2009 settlement, the company paid $2.3 billion in fines, the largest healthcare fraud settlement in the history of the U.S. Department of Justice, stemming from allegations of illegally marketing of off-label products not approved by the FDA. Pfizer, one of the most criminally fined drug companies in the world, wants to weaken the laws that hold them accountable, Barnes told the defender. Congress has taken no action on the False Claim Amendments Act since November of 2021, when the bill was added to the Senate's legislative calendar. Barnes said the outcome of Jackson's case against Pfizer is significant not just for his client, but also for the American public. This case will determine if Big Pharma can rip off the American people using a dangerous drug that harms millions without any legal remedy because they claim the government was in on the scam. And by the way, I have no doubt the government was in on the scam, so this may in fact actually give them a way out. Compliments of Tony the Rat. Jackson was a regional director for Ventavia for a brief period in 2020, but fired after she notified the FDA about issues with Pfizer's vaccine trials. After having been fired, she gave the British Medical Journal a cache of internal company documents, photos, and recordings highlighting the alleged wrongdoing by Ventavia. The document she provided contained evidence of falsified data, blind trial failures, and awareness on the part of at least Ventavia executive that members of the company staff were falsifying data. Jackson's documents also provide evidence of administrators who had no training or medical certification or who provided very little oversight during the trials. Jackson filed her complaint in August of 2021 in the U.S. District Court, Eastern District of Texas, Beaumont Division, alleging Pfizer, Ventavia, and Nikon deliberately withheld crucial information from the United States that calls their safety and efficacy, the safety and efficacy of their vaccine into question. A district court judge in February unsealed Jackson's complaint which included 400 pages of exhibits. According to the complaint, Jackson, who had more than 15 years of experience working with clinical trials, repeatedly informed her superiors of poor laboratory management, patient safety concerns, and data integrity issues during the approximately 2 weeks she was employed by Ventavia. So, of course, they had to get rid of her. She was outing them. She knew what was going on. She had enough background and experience to detect fraud taking place before her very eyes. But the beat goes on. Why the rush for toddler vaccines? Asked the Wall Street Journal editorial member. This is so tragic. Alyssa Findley, a member of Wall Street Journal's editorial board Monday, called into question the motives behind the Food and Drug Administration decision to extend emergency use of Pfizer and Moderna's vax to infants and toddlers. This is just about as disgusting as it gets. Putting to risk infants and toddlers for whom there's no reason whatsoever to be given a vaccination for COVID, absolutely none. The risk to them is virtually non-existent. A Wall Street Journal editorial board member Monday called into question the motives behind the FDA decision to extend emergency use authorization of Pfizer and Moderna's vax to toddlers and infants as young as 6 months old. Writing, the decision was motivated by politics and pressure rather than science and medicine. In her WSJ opinion piece, Why the Rush for Toddler Vaccines, Alicia Findley wrote, the FDA standard for approving vaccines in otherwise healthy people, especially children, is supposed to be higher than for drugs that treat the sick. But the FDA conspicuously lowered its standards to approve COVID vax for toddlers. Why? Finley started her piece with a quote from President Biden, which praised the FDA's recommendation. This is a very historic milestone, he said. The United States is now the first country in the world to offer safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine for children as young as 6 months, except the vaccine is neither safe nor effective. How many times have I provided evidence proof? Neither safe nor effective. Just stunning. She responded, in fact, we don't know if the vaccines are safe and effective, but she could have gone far further. You got millions of adverse effects reported. You got hundreds of thousands. I believe the number is actually vastly greater deaths. A whole enterprise is calculated to take out, to depopulate the earth into the billions. Billions. This is the greatest exercise in genocide that history has ever known. She continued. The rushed FDA action was based on extremely weak evidence. It's one thing to show regulatory flexibility during an emergency, but for COVID, for children, COVID isn't an emergency. The FDA bent its standards to an unusual degree and brushed aside troubling evidence that warrants more investigation. Mr. Biden's hypocrisy is hard to stomach, she wrote. Listing many reasons for caution in vaccinating kids against COVID, including children are at low risk of dying from COVID. Only 209 between 6 months and 4 years old have died, about 0.02% of all virus deaths in the U.S. About half as many toddlers were hospitalized with COVID between October 2020 and September 2021, as were hospitalized with the flu during the previous winter. So it's only half as hazardous to kids as the flu. The two children in Pfizer's trial who became the sickest with COVID also tested positive for other viruses. It's possible many hospitalizations attributed to COVID this winter were instigated or exacerbated by other viruses. The FDA authorized vaccines for toddlers based on a comparison of the antibodies they generated to the original Wuhan variant with those in young adults who'd received two doses. But two doses offer little if any protection against Omicron in adults, and even protection against hospitalization is only 40 to 60%. Where I regard all those figures as fabrications. Vaccinated toddlers in Pfizer's trial were more likely to get severely ill with COVID than those who received a placebo. In other words, it actually increased the prospect of getting COVID if you took the shot. Most children who developed multiple infections during the trial had been vaccinated. FDA granted the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine for toddlers an emergency use authorization, allowing the agency to expedite access for products that, quote, prevent serious or life-threatening diseases or conditions, wrote Finley. While adult vax clearly met this standard in late 2020, the toddler vaccine do not. They aren't necessary to prevent serious or life-threatening diseases or conditions. The COVID is causing fewer than half as many illnesses as the ordinary flu. It is not serious, a serious or life-threatening disease or condition for children. So why did the FDA rush and bend its standards? Perhaps they felt pressure from the White House as well as anxious parents, where I add the anxious parents are completely ignorant and oblivious of the threat posed by the vax. They mistakenly believe what they've been told. They're willing consumers of propaganda that it's safe and effective. White House COVID response coordinator Ashish Jha repeatedly told parents he expected vaccines for toddlers would be available in June. So they wanted to make them available in June. Meanwhile, get this. Dr. David Martin has some sobering thoughts. This is from June the 28th. 700 million worldwide will die from COVID vax by 2028. That's by 2028. The number is ultimately going to be in the billions. Have no doubt. The number is going to be in the billions. Dr. David Martin has a deep medical science and investment resume. He also runs a company, MCAM International, that finances cutting-edge innovation worldwide. He's also among the key people seeking justice in lawsuits, suing medical companies and the federal government involved in delivering the so-called vaccines for COVID-19. In simple terms, according to Dr. Martin, the COVID vaccines are bioweapons. Big Pharma and the government knew it and also knew it would cause massive deaths and permanent injuries. Dr. Martin says it's going to get much worse. It's not a coronavirus vaccine. It is a spike protein instruction to make the human body produce a toxin. The fact of the matter is the injections are an act of bioweapons and bioterrorism. They are not a public health measure. The facts are very simple. This was premeditated. This was a campaign of domestic terror to get the public to accept the universal vaccine platform using a known biological weapon. That is their own words and not my interpretation. How many will die from the COVID bioweapons? Dr. Martin says, by their own estimate, they're looking for 700 million globally, and that would put the U.S. participation in that of the injected population as 75 to 100 million right here in the USA. There are a lot of reasons they hope it'll be between now and 2028, because there's this tiny little glitch in the liquidity of the Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid programs. So the fewer recipients of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, the better. Not surprisingly, the recommendation was people over the age of 65 were the first to be injected. Dr. Martin thinks the catastrophic effect of the COVID injection will hit the medical industry soon. As he explains, the dirty secret is there are a lot of pilots having microvascular and clotting problems that keep them out of the cockpit, which is a good place not to have them if they're going to throw a clot for a stroke or a heart attack. The problem is we are going to see that exact same phenomenon in the healthcare industry at a much larger scale. So we have now, along with the actual problem of people getting sick and dying, we have that targeting the healthcare industry writ large, which means we're going to have nurses and doctors who are going to be among the sick and the dead. That also means the sick and the dying are not going to get care. Dr. Martin and his group are suing everyone from President Biden to the FDA, the CDC, Pfizer, Moderna, and many others over the deaths and injuries from the COVID bioweapons fraudulently passed off as vaccines. The next big court case is July 6th, yesterday, in federal court in Utah, the day before. Dr. Martin contends this is far worse than the Nuremberg trials of the Nazis after World War II and adds, this is organized crime. They have hidden behind the immunity shield that absolves them of product liability by naming the delivery of a bioweapon a vaccination program, which is actually a criminal act. This is an act of domestic terror, and it is an antitrust violation. This is racketeering. This is old school racketeering, and it's no different than the mob in the 1920s. This is old school racketeering for personal gain and profit at the expense of human lives. You need to call it what it is, and it's organized crime. I would say the Nazis were better than the people who are doing this. The real question is, why did American citizens develop a weapon to kill Americans and get paid to do it? That is a morally outrageous question, and unfortunately, almost no one is asking it. But I dare say the question answers itself. They were paid to do it. They were also extorted and pressured with threats of loss of their livelihood, loss of their pension, being fired if they did not conform. So the question, why did American citizens develop a weapon to kill Americans and get paid to do it? They were extorted. They were paid. They were threatened. They were blackballed. Many were fired. Situation completely stunning. Meanwhile, just as the European Union has reversed itself by declaring fossil fuels, gas and oil, to be green energy sources, the Army has reinstated the high school diploma requirement as recruitment plummets. Service leaders offer to welcome more applicants without degrees amidst the most challenging recruiting environment since the Vietnam War. But as I've explained, this was absurd in the first place. You have an increasingly technical and sophisticated military. It's counterproductive to bring in recruits who don't have the intellectual ability to deal with it. Army recruits need to have a high school diploma after all, some of them at least. After briefly signaling they would waive the minimum education requirement for a limited number of recruits, Army leaders have reversed course and reinstated the need for a high school diploma or GED, an Army spokesman reported Tuesday. The service on June 23rd began allowing people to enlist without a high school diploma or GED as long as they scored 50 or higher on the military's entrance test called the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery and met all the other standard enlistment criteria, said a spokesman for the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, which has posted additional details. The service said it wanted to consider candidates who may have a reason for not completing their education, such as caring for terminally ill family members. The change was short-lived. Army officials reinstated the education requirement 1 week later. The reversal was first reported by military.com, citing an internal memo on Tuesday. Army spokesman Mac Leonard confirmed the policy change was suspended, but could not provide additional information. The Army, which is the U.S. military's largest service branch, as opposed to the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marine Corps, which is actually a branch of the Navy, is struggling to attract qualified candidates at a rate that has alarmed top generals. According to DOD data, only 23% of 17 to 24-year-old Americans are eligible to enlist without a waiver of some kind, down from 29% in recent years. Only 9% of those are willing to join the military, the lowest share in 15 years. Let me observe these millions of migrants flowing across the border. A staggering percentage are physically fit military age. I guarantee 100% they're going to be recruited into the U.S. military. The great advantage from the point of view of the Biden administration is that American soldiers would not be willing to fire on the American people. But these migrants incorporated into the military are going to be willing and able to do that. Mark my words.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, if you have any doubts about whether Biden is competent, whether he has any interest in preserving the integrity of the economy of the United States, appreciate this. Oil that Biden released from the U.S. Strategic Reserve ended up in China. Surprise, surprise. Millions of barrels of oil released last month from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve by President Joe Biden went to foreign nations, including China, according to Reuters. Biden ordered the release of 50 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in November, 30 million on March 1st, 180 million more on March 31st, saying the historic action would ease the pressure faced at the pumps. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve will continue to release 1 million barrels a day through October, even as it has fallen to its lowest level since 1986. U.S. crude inventories are at their lowest since 2004. These releases will put more than 1 billion barrels per day on the market over the next 6 months and will help address supply chain disruptions caused by Putin's further invasion of Ukraine and the price hike that Americans are facing at the pump, he claimed in April when announcing the release. But it turns out millions of barrels have already been sent to China and other nations, according to Reuters. Cargoes of crude have been shipped to the Netherlands, a Reliance refinery in India, and China, citing an industry source. China and India have steadily purchase U.S. sour crude produced in the Gulf of Mexico, as Bloomberg has previously explained. Matt Smith, lead oil analyst at Kepler, told Reuters the release of the oil isn't having the intended effects. Crude and fuel prices would likely be higher if the Strategic Petroleum Reserve releases hadn't happened, but at the same time, it isn't really having the effect that was assumed. Oil and gas prices have actually increased despite the Strategic Reserve releases. ranking member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, and Energy Subcommittee Republican leader Fred Upton demanded answers from the Biden administration over how the releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve are giving her adversaries geopolitical leverage. China wrapped up its purchase of crude from Russia and the United States to boost its own reserves, even as oil prices surge, and Biden called for a coordinated release. Republican leaders wrote, China is reportedly in talks with Russia to buy even more oil for its strategic reserves, while the U.S. and the EU pledged to ban Russian imports. As a result, China may now control the world's largest stockpile of oil, with total crude inventories estimated at 950 million barrels. 950 million barrels. So what's Biden doing to benefit the United States? Nothing whatsoever. Every action he's taken has been destructive of the United States and its economy. Remember, his first acts in entering the White House, where, by the way, he does not appear to be residing, a reporter who's set up nearby has been observing the White House using a telescopic sight and has observed no activity 3 days in a row. Biden isn't even in the White House, which is symbolically significant because he doesn't belong in the White House. But the fact of the matter is, his first act becoming president was to cancel the XL pipeline and permits to drill on federal lands, where Donald Trump, among his many positive contributions to America, was to strengthen our economy and to make us energy independent, as well as clamping down on the border, for which we should be eternally grateful, as well as calling out the fake news and making the whole world aware that the media, the mainstream media in the United States, is a propaganda organ of the deep state. And I dare say of the Rothschild banking empire, which is behind the global depopulation program and the Great Reset fostered by the World Economic Forum, where Klaus Schwab, in case you missed the memo, is himself a Rothschild. And remember, the Rothschild owned both the AP and Reuters. Virtually all the American news comes from the AP and Reuters. And as I've observed on numerous occasions in the past, I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have another panel of 100 executives from NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. I have a third panel of 100 executives from the New York Times, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. This is flabbergasting. During the very first political speech of my life on November 15th of 2008 on the grass outside of the Capitol in Washington, D.C., during a Ron Paul Freedom Rally on Tax Day 2008, I gave a speech, my very first political speech, subsequently published under the heading 9/11 and the Neocon Agenda, in which I observed that no dual citizen should ever be put in a position of policy shaping or decision making in the American government, because you cannot know that their loyalty to the other state does not outweigh their loyalty to the United States. And as we learned from Cynthia McKinney during an interview she gave on Press TV in 2011, every candidate for Congress, the House or the Senate, is asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. Yes. To put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. Can you believe? And any who refuse to sign, and they are few and far between, find that their finances dry up, that they're being confronted with an alternative candidate. Their district has been redrawn. Cynthia was able to transcend those obstacles and serve 6 or 8 terms in the House, but even as admirable a member as John Kasich, whom I regarded at the time as the wisest, the smartest member of Congress, was unable to survive. His district was redrawn and he lost his seat. No wonder we're in such a terrible state. The members of Congress have signed a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States. Here's an interesting story. In the wake of the Supreme Court decisions about the Second Amendment, which I applaud, mother who lost son to shooting slams Second Amendment lawmakers. I don't need the government to save me. Lucretia Hughes Kluken, whose 19-year-old son Emmanuel was killed by a felon with an illegally obtained weapon in 2016, spoke out passionately against gun control before Congress, indicating such policies do not save lives. Her testimony came before last month's House Committee on Oversight and Reform hearing on the gun violence epidemic. A convicted felon killed my son with an illegally obtained gun, she conveyed. Gun control lobbyists and politicians claim their policies will save lives and reduce violence. Well, these policies did not protect my son. Here's a tweet about it out of the Oversight Committee, Republicans. Gun control lobbyists and politicians claim their policies will save lives and reduce violence. Well, those policies did not save my son. Emmanuel, Lucretia Hughes Kluken's son, was killed by a convicted felon with an illegal gun. More from Lucretia and the importance of the Second Amendment. We must prepare to be our own first responders to protect ourselves and our loved ones, added Hughes. I'm a legal, law-abiding citizen. I don't need the government to save me. Hughes went on to suggest gun control laws have failed to halt violence within the black community, and those law-abiding people who look like me are often victims. How about letting me defend myself against evil? Do you think I'm not capable or trustworthy to handle firearms, she asked. Do you think the Second Amendment does not apply to people that look like me? Hughes' powerful testimony was reminiscent of that delivered by Andrew Pollack, the father who lost his daughter in the Parkland, Florida high school shooting, I must add. No one lost their daughter or their son at Parkland. It was a staged event using simmunition, which is fake ammunition made out of beeswax and laundry detergent. It will create a welt, but it will not penetrate the skin. Nevertheless, what he's saying is very appropriate. Pollack delivered a jaw-dropping speech at the White House in 2018 in which he too argued against gun control. If we all work together and come up with the right idea, school safety, it's not about gun laws. That is another fight, another battle. Let's fix the schools, and then you guys can battle it out whatever you want. We need our children safe. C-SPAN tweeted as follows. Andrew Pollack, father of Meadow Pollack. My daughter has no voice. She was murdered last week. She was taken from us, shot 9 times on the 3rd floor. Hugh's speech was largely ignored by the mainstream media, who themselves advocate passionately for gun control. The Washington Post buried Kluken's testimony 10 paragraphs into their coverage and snidely commented that she was only brought in to help Republicans. Lucretia Hughes Kluken spoke at the invitation of the committee's minority members, which is to say that she was there to argue against increasing gun regulations, they wrote. The Post then dismissed her comment, saying that while her sorrow was palpable, They couldn't help but imagine a country filled with people who already distrust one another, who can't agree on facts, all armed against each other in a storm of grief and anger. It was a subtle way to discredit her comments and argue in favor of gun control while trying to convince readers they have no bias. Well, it's very interesting, the claim to have no bias, because there turns out to be a whole lot of journalists who are admitting they are biased, and the American people are noticing what's going on. Rather stunning stuff. Meanwhile, I've written a letter to the Wisconsin State Journal, which I have no doubt they will not publish. Assault weapons and gun control. Editor, Democrats seize on the spate of recent mass shootings to promote their gun control agenda, but they misled the public by suppressing some of the most important facts of the matter by design. On MSNBC, Claire McCaskill asserted that 70,000 lives are lost to gun violence each year, not sorting out members as opposed to murders as opposed to suicide, police in performing their duty, or civilians in self-defense. It turns out Americans use guns to defend themselves from criminals millions of times every year, saving an estimated 200,000 per annum in lives that otherwise would have been lost. The AR-15 may be a military-style weapon in appearance, but it is not a weapon of war, which would be fully automatic when the AR-15 is only semi-automatic, but they like the sound of the phrase. Some claim that the Founding Fathers did not have military-style weapons in mind when they authored the Second Amendment, but it was actually military, not just military-style weapons they had in mind. The point was to have citizen soldiers who were armed and ready to rise to the defense of the nation in times of tyranny. They had it right then and right now. Some would say now more than ever. I think that's completely right. Here's one more story before I open the lines to callers. The number, of course, 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. The United Nations scrubbed this article heralding the benefits of world hunger from its website after it went viral. Mounting evidence continues to emerge proving the food shortage and supply chain disruptions are being manufactured by the United Nations, the World Economic Forum, and the World Health Organization in an effort to institute a new world order, global government, and destroy the United States. A 2009 op-ed published by the UN, now removed, heralds hunger as the foundation of wealth and a means to bolster the world economy. Think of it. Hunger must be sustained to exploit manual labor, contends George Kent, a professor at the University of Hawaii's Political Science Department, who authored the November 2021 UN document. We sometimes talk about hunger in the world as though it were a scourge all of us want to see abolished, viewing it as comparable to the plague or AIDS. But that naive view prevents us from coming to grips with what causes and sustains hunger. Hunger has great positive value to many people. Indeed, it is fundamental to the working of the world's economy. Hungry people are the most productive, especially when there's a need for manual labor. Without the threat of hunger, essential low-paying jobs would become vacant, a labor shortage would emerge, the global economy would cease to exist, Kent continues. We in developed countries sometimes see poor people by the roadside holding up signs saying, "We'll work for food." Actually, most people work for food. It's mainly because people need food to survive, and they work so hard either in producing food for themselves in subsistence level production or by selling their services to others in exchange for money. How many of us would sell out our services if it were not for the threat of hunger? Here we have Jamie White tweeting. The UN deleted its 13-year-old article, The Benefits of World Hunger, moments after I published an article about it. Fortunately, an archived version can be found here. Well, it was entitled Peace, Dignity, and Equality on a Healthy Planet. More importantly, how many of us would sell our services so cheaply if it were not for the threat of hunger? When we sell ourselves cheaply, we enrich others, those who own factories and machines and the land, and ultimately own the people who work for them. For those who depend on the availability of cheap labor, hunger is a foundation for wealth. This might as well be retitled An Apology for Slavery. This is the equivalent of an apology for slavery. According to the UN, assumptions attributing poverty and low-paying jobs to hunger are nonsense because those deprived of nourishment have a strong incentive to work. Those who would have established massive biofuel production operations, who would have established massive biofuel production in Brazil if they did not know there were thousands of hungry people desperate enough to take the awful jobs they would offer? He's saying this is a good thing. Who would build any sort of factory if they did not know many people would be available to take the jobs at low pay rates? How much of the hunger literature talks about how it's important to assure people are well fed so they can be more productive? That is nonsense. No one works harder than hungry people. Yes, people who are well-nourished have a greater capacity for productive physical work, but well-nourished people are far less willing to do that work. Slaves to hunger are assets to people at the high end, Clint concludes as follows. The non-government organization Free the Slaves defines slaves as people who are not allowed to walk away from their jobs. It estimates there are about 27 million slaves in the world, including those who are literally locked into workrooms and held as bonded laborers in South Asia. However, they do not include people who might be described as slaves to hunger. That is, those who are free to walk away from their jobs but have nothing better to do. Maybe most people who work are slaves to hunger. For those of us at the high end of the social ladder, ending hunger globally would be a disaster. If there were no hunger in the world, who would plow the fields? Who would harvest our vegetables? Who would work in the rendering plants? Who would clean our toilets? We have to produce our own food and clean our toilets. No wonder people at the high end are not rushing to solve the hunger problem. For many of us, hunger is not a problem, but an asset. The decade-old op-ed was removed from the UN website Wednesday, hours after it went viral. How stunning is that? Meanwhile, I'm opening the lines to callers. 540-352-4452. You're welcome to call in. Mitchell will field your call. We've had quite a number of rather significant stories today. And I'll add yet one more that's rather fascinating while waiting to see. CNN reporter smears GOP candidate as proud spreader of lies and something beautiful happens. On the Rubin Report Thursday, Blaze host David Rubin shared a viral clip of Carrie Lake, Republican candidate for governor, wiping the floor with CNN senior national reporter and hit piece peddler Kay Young Law. In the video, Lake, a former Fox News anchor, shakes hands with Law before pointing out that the CNN reporter doesn't have a mask on anymore, a barbed reference to an interview in October 2021 when Law falsely smeared the Trump-backed GOP candidate as a rising star of the right wing and proud spreader of lies. Asked if she has a minute to chat, Lake replies, I'll do an interview as long as it airs on CNN Plus. Does that still exist? I didn't think so because the people don't like what you guys are peddling, which is propaganda. Thank you. Blake then walks away, leaving Law visibly stunned. I like that. It fits. We have our first caller here, Bruce in Texas. Bruce, join the conversation.
Hello, Jim. Am I coming through okay? If
yep.
not, I'll reboot.
You're fine. You're fine, Bruce. Go for it.
Okay, great. Yeah, it just seems like yesterday that we had a oil surplus, doesn't it?
Oh, I know. Remember it's absolutely. Days? Yes, yes, yes. I mean, Trump had made us oil energy independent. First time I can recall in my life that that had happened, for which I think he deserves enormous praise. And Biden immediately trashed it, dumped it, canceled. Now he's sending off our strategic petroleum reserve to China and India. I can't think of anything more repulsive he could be doing in a time of great energy need for the United States. And then he goes begging to Saudi Arabia, which won't even answer phone calls from Biden. Bruce, we're about to hit the break, but I want you to stay here so we can have our conversation continue. If you want to squeeze in a sound bite, you've got just about enough time to do that.
Okay. During the Trump era, you know, we had an oil surplus. But during the Obama, the tail end of the Obama administration, I was involved in fracking trucking stuff. And
Bruce,
he had the Saudis flood the market. Go ahead.
Bruce, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll pick it up right after this break.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Bruce, please continue. Pick it up.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm going to make a quick connection between politics and the oil industry. Okay, we remember in the second Obama administration, we had the coup there in the Ukraine. Russia moved in to protect Georgia and Crimea. And in response, Obama had and the State Department had the Emirates and Saudi Arabia flood the market, trying to crash the ruble in response to a Putin's move. And so that's when we had so much oil that it wasn't profitable to even pull it out of the ground. And so they filled up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at that time. And so entered Trump, you know, and so in an oil supply situation, we're on an even keel. Then prices kind of came back up a little bit, stabilized until COVID hit. And now they're going the other way. You know, they're trying to crash Russia by choking off its exports. And so now Russia is turning to China and the Far East and the southern parts of the world with it. So now Biden is selling our reserve in order to cut into Russia's profit margin. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it's not working. It's not working, Bruce. Russia has benefited from the Western sanctions. It's all had a boomerang effect. It's were completely opposite than it was intended because most of the other nations of the world are going in the BRICS direction. The ruble is now the strongest performing currency in the world. Without any doubt, it's going to weaken, if not completely destroy, the U.S. petrodollar, which means it's going to have vast consequences for the quality of life here in the United States and contribute to further inflation. So every policy that Biden has embraced has been destructive of the United States. I cannot think of a single exception. Further thoughts of yours?
Yeah. They don't give a rat's behind about anybody. Their only focus is world domination and trying to break their main rival, which is Russia. And so they'll starve millions. They'll put tens of thousands of Americans out of work, which is what happened to the shale oil industry. When they flooded the market, a lot of startups and medium-sized companies went bankrupt when the oil market collapsed. And they're willing to shove, you know, Ukrainians into a damn wood chipper there, hit the Russian military, and they don't give a rat's behind. These people are an enemy inside our state. And, of course, that's probably not news to anybody listening, but I think it's just a point to be reinforced.
Well, I think you're 100% correct, Bruce. Further thoughts you'd like to add?
Yeah, before I go, it's just pretty depressing that these institutions that we used to respect, and, you know, you're an academic and former military officer and I'm former military. And just to see how it's changed so much, you know. The GT score for the Army was 80, I believe. It's still that. They want to lower it to 50. That's almost retard level.
That's my interpretation that they may have renamed the test. It used to be the GCT. The GCT was a general intelligence test, and it was highly reliable. So I don't quite get what's going on here, unless it's simply more subterfuge to make the public confound the public about what's really going on, because none of this is good. And, you know, depleting the military of individuals who are so inadequate in their learning ability, they're not going to be able to benefit the military. They're not going to be able to operate the machinery. It's all further damaging our ability, our national security, and our ability to stand up for ourselves as a nation. You're welcome to stand by. Let me draw in Mitchell here on our conversation. Mitchell, would you like to add some thoughts? I mean, these stories being covered today are pretty awesome. Your thoughts?
Well, Jim, I think we've just entered into the season of riots, and the nuts haven't matured yet, I guess is the only way to say it. That, you know, we're going through this period of problem, reaction, solution, the old Hegelian dialectic. And they have been training people, you know, with the power of the media at the subconscious level. You know, as I sent you a text a few minutes ago before the one break, and you were talking about learned helplessness and how, you know, the population is essentially developing this. And I mean, that's a phenomena that has happened most assuredly. And we have then essentially political radicals on one side or the other of the uni party, the useful idiots of the Republican and Democrat parties. I'm sorry, I just, you know, look at them as two herds of sheep. One with one stripe and the other one, you know, one with X's and one with O's. And, you know, they're just led into different pastures. And they, you know, they're gaslighted into a reality that is not real. And in fact, it's detrimental to their own life, livelihood, and health. I guess.
And do you see any way out, Mitchell? What is?
Oh. Well, gosh, Jim, that's tough to say. We can have a political revolution. But it has to be, we first have to have a revolution of thought and a renaissance for freedom and individual responsibility. I personally can't see that happening in the political climate that we have. So we'll have to have the hard crash or the big war. And even then, people will double down on their misconceptions and their, you know, how the world really functions, you know, with the international terrorist organizations like the World Economic Forum, the Council on Foreign Relations, you know, the Bilderberg Group, all the think tanks that are essentially appendages of most of them of foreign powers and other individuals that are working to subvert the Constitution. And, you know, there has, I guess at this point, and it's really bad to say, but there must be some type of mass bloodshed. And the question is, will it be on the side of people who will be slaughtered and will not fight back, as, you know, Gandhi and the peace movement kind of in India brought the British Empire to its knees almost. So, you know, there will have to be a nonviolent response. And only through such an outrage, I think, short of, well, you know, war in Europe, that may change the direction. But the message masters in the media, they believe in the psychological science and the proof of their words and actions that they have already completed. So we know that the media can literally indoctrinate anybody and everybody into a thought process or a paradigm of misinformation and disbelief of reality. That's the thing. And then to get that person to act on that disbelief of reality, you know, it's really tenuous. It's really tough to say, in all honesty.
Here's a doozy. Mosquitoes testing positive to rare deadly viruses in months after Bill Gates released millions into the wild. Is there a greater threat to humanity than Bill Gates? I think he's right up there with Klaus Schwab as a monster. Why would he have done that? Millions. Mosquitoes testing positive to rare deadly viruses in the U.S. months after Bill Gates released millions in the wild. Months after Bill Gates tech startup released millions of genetically modified mosquitoes into the wild, mosquitoes across the U.S. are testing positive for extremely rare and deadly viruses, some of which have never before been reported in the United States. Mitchell, this is so sickening. This is just so disgusting.
Well, Jim, have you swabbed the counter at the meat market or in the grocery store or the carts out there? Our world is so full of bacteria and viruses, you know, in the humans and animals, human animals. And I would expect that to happen, in all honesty. And, you know, I don't know if it is I don't know to quantify any effect that might have. But the problem is we're trying to manipulate the populations of insects, bugs, and everything else, along with the plants, and now humans. And it's a recipe for disaster. We're essentially creating, you know, a love canal of the world in a genetic, you know, and a viral sense. It truly is a dangerous place to be, because you do not understand, or I should say, while the scientists believe they understand all the mechanisms and all the reactions and actions of these types of viruses that they create in labs, in all honesty, they are not aware of the real world evolutionary chains that happen and the intermingling of viruses and humans and different immune systems that cause that natural evolutionary response. And, you know, this this utter madness of, you know, giving children, you know, small children, the clot shot, the COVID vaccine, it's beyond madness. And it's just it's real a symptom of how far our government, our science, and everything has been politicized. I mean, I'm sure you remember the doctors who would recommend smoking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We used to have ads of doctors on television smoking, about extolling the health benefits of smoking. Mitchell, you got that exactly right. How unbelievable is that?
Sir?
Yeah.
How unbelievable is that? Bruce, you may have some comments on what Mitchell has been observing. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Hello, Mitchell. How you doing?
Hey, Bruce.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you can't trust these people with technology. You know, technology in the wrong hands can be a very dangerous thing. And getting around with our genetics, we've evolved in this biological soup of microbes. Like you said, our immune systems adapt to it, but they keep throwing these new genetically altered things at us, and apparently for a reason, and that's to kill us. There can't be no other motive, you know. If they wanted to reduce the planet's population, they could incentivize sterilization that the third world gave everybody, like, that wants one, you know, $5,000 payment for being sterilized. And if you're living, you know, in poverty somewhere, you would jump at that. A lot of people would jump at that. Well, we spend all these trillions of dollars on war and on, you know, the most inane stuff. It's just mind-boggling.
Mitchell.
Well, I'll tell you, our government believes it has a never-ending money pit. And it's got all our names on it. They believe that if the Federal Reserve banksters will buy all the debt that they can ever pop out there, you know, we'll be Japan. You know, we'll be hyperinflated and we'll end up with stagflation. And 20 years down the road, the politicians will still be arguing that Trump did it. Man who served 4 years as the president, while the members of Congress have essentially been there for 40 years or more. The ones that are complaining the loudest are the ones that are most responsible of where the country is today. That's a problem. Right.
Where do you both stand on chemtrails?
Oh, bad news. I mean, in the U.S. Military, the Air Force, which surveys every inch of sky over the United States, is not only aware of them, but appears to have been dispersing them. And I believe they included elements that were going to make wildfires run uncontrollably. They had aluminum, barium, some other elements that would be very, very bad, you know, and damaging and promote wildfires as virtual forms that were incendiary once they were ignited, which could be done by spaceborne satellite laser weapons. Mitchell, your thoughts?
I believe chemtrails are real. I believe that the United States government is spraying shit and they're trying to keep it secret. And it's strange that they're spraying these particular patterns and spraying this stuff over particular areas. And it does make you wonder why. Whether it is some nanotech engineering or whether it is just, you know, basically poisoning of the planet. I mean, you know, there's as crazy as this sounds, they may just be dumping toxic waste. You know, I don't put it past any of these people. You know, you see trucks go up and down the road sometimes and they're leaking. And I'm sure by the time they get where they're going, they're empty. And that used to be up in New Jersey. That used to be a popular tactic with the mafia. But they would take their toxic waste and put it in a truck, and then it would just slowly leak out as they drove the truck around the New Jersey highways.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. I love it, Mitchell. That's a great point.
So, you know, I mean, we really can't say. And life is so, it's so in your face, and it's so obvious sometimes. It's you can't believe it. That it's just right there. It's like a billboard right in front of you. I guess what I would say is when I worked at the nuclear power plant, we were loading nuclear waste on a tractor trailer and helping the driver strap it down one afternoon. And when I looked at the trucking company, I realized, well, that's it. You know, the trucking company hauling the nuclear waste was Hitman. Out of Chicago, Illinois.
Wow.
I mean, who's going to argue with that?
Right. Hey, I got to go, but before I go,
thanks,
I just want to throw my name on Kentrail. They're based out of old stack bases, like Dice Air Force Base in Texas. I've seen one of these airplanes because I was outside and it was going back and forth, two of them. And I'm sure everyone who looks up in the daytime sees this sometimes. You know, they make this checkerboard pattern, and they go back and forth, back and forth. It looks like a Tholian web in Star Trek, you know, two aircraft, and, you know, making a pattern up there. Stuff spreads out, sinks down, and got this nano aluminum and barium. And well, that creates a nice greenhouse effect when you get enough of it in the atmosphere. You get enough of that in the atmosphere, we have these sky-high temperatures. Yeah, these sky-high temperatures, that's sort of the agenda, the Green New Deal, carbon trading, destroying industrialization, the whole works. And anyhow, I got to go.
Okay, Bruce, thank you for your call.
Yeah, you're right, Bruce, you're right.
Mitchell, further thoughts on the stories of the day or other?
Well, you know, But the simp assassin.
Oh yeah, in Japan. Tell us.
Yes, the frustrated man who never gets laid is essentially the line that we're being handed for the assassination of former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. They have been saying that Abe had wanted to push an agenda that had the young Japanese culture start hooking up and having more sex. And he's been receiving a lot of pushback from that, trying to reverse the population decline of Japan. That was one of the things that they have talked about. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. The guy used a homemade shotgun. He found a couple of barrels and he made some black powder and create. Apparently, he has died. By the way, it was a successful attempt, and the former prime minister is dead.
Yes, he had died shortly right at about the time of the attack. It said that the first shot missed him. However, the second shot hit him in the left chest, and that he was actually, you know, they said he was non-responsive and lifeless at the scene, even though they loaded him on. One of the questions that I saw on Twitter was, why didn't they have any kind of shot packs or clot? Clot dressings and stuff like that people would typically carry in America and many other places. And I believe the real reason like that is because guns and gun crime is so rare in Japan. So they would not have those life-saving tools in a kit in their car, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Sure it does. I mean...
But yeah, it's... So who really knows? All I know is that it's up to us to make the difference. And it's us that has to, that it's me and you and the good people of this planet have to stand up. Because, you know, we can prosper in peace or we can die in some stupid war. And, you know, there are enough psychopaths in government that are, there's enough psychopaths in government that would gladly have you die in war. We're almost out of time, Jim. Less than a minute.
Well, yeah, Biden has picked up on this shooting where he wants to use it to promote gun control. While there are many details we do not yet know, we know that violent attacks are never acceptable and that gun violence always leaves a deep scar on communities affected. The United States stands with Japan. I send my deepest condolences. The gun violence notice is, of course, jarring because Japan has strict anti-gun laws, as you've observed, making gun violence almost non-existent, just as you've been observing. So some believe this is, you know, just a moronic remark by Biden displaying his ignorance of Japanese culture. Since they already banned guns, it was a kind of a fluke that this assassination was carried out. Mitchell, thanks, thanks, thanks. And thanks to Bruce and all of you. And have a spend as much time this weekend with your friends and loved ones. They deserve it. You need it. We don't know how much time we have left.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...